Are you ready for new dimensions and countless possibilities today and for the future? It's an exciting new time, and the answers are out there. So join Mary Jane Popp as she explores the unique and unusual for a better life on Pop Talk in search of the truth. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
And welcome to Pop Talk. Have I got a show for you this time around. We're going to go all the way from talking about artificial intelligence and the future and what it means to you and me in our daily lives. We're going to be talking about vitamins and minerals and things that will keep you healthy or happy, you know, live long and prosper type of thing. Remember from Star Trek? We'll also talk about the hidden power in your DNA. Do we have hidden power in our DNA? And if we do, what exactly does that mean? And how will it affect us? And how can we use it and get to it? But before we do that, I've always been fascinated, absolutely fascinated, with anything that has to do with Native American. You know, the teachings, the way that they believe. And it's not only a religion. It's a life. It's a life and a lifestyle. But what does that mean? Are there some teachings and secrets that we all need to know? Well, let's find out. You know, we talk about the Andes and the word mystical arises. But why? And what does this word actually mean? We're going to check in with Martha Winona Travers. She's author of Encounters with the Mystical Traditions of the Andes. Now, Dr. Travers has researched and studied with the indigenous Quechua in the Andes and their elder, Taita Alberto Taxo, for 22 years. It's about shamanic teachings of the condor. We'll find out what that means, too. Hi, Martha. How are you?
Hi, Mary. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
Define the word mystical. That's thrown around a lot. So what does it really mean?
Well, it's a beautiful word, and it's true that we hear it, and we may wonder about how to define it. To some degree, I think it depends on the individual person's experience. So it may have more than one definition, depending on the person.
Okay.
But in my way of understanding, a mystical experience is when we transcend our feeling of being an individual personality with certain projects and ego desires and fears and move out of that state into a feeling of communion and union with the great, beautiful forces that are the creators of our world.
Wow.
So a mystical experience, the word yoga means union, and a mystical experience is uniting with the large cosmic path that is the path of every individual, but that our human mind can tend to cause us to not be aware of or to forget during certain periods of time.
Is it also a problem because we don't open ourselves up to the possibilities? You know, it's almost like when we're little kids, we have those friends that we talk to and they go, oh, you know, those aren't real. We don't know that that's not real. And then we grow up and it's like, you got to forget about those things. You don't talk about that anymore because you have to be logical. You have to be educated. And that's not part of that. How do we get back to that, you know, being the child that says, yeah, I'm open to anything?
Yeah. Well, what you describe is very true for many people. And my teacher, Taita Alberto Taxo, would refer to that as the world of the eagle, E-A-G-L-E, eagle, the bird, the eagle, which prioritizes the intellect and reason, which are extremely important faculties. So there was never any denigration in the way that he would speak of those faculties. But he would remind us that we've forgotten what he, in his tradition, calls the world of the condor, which is the world of intuition, the world of the ability to sense that there are other dimensions of reality beyond what we perceive with our five senses.
Okay.
And so the world of the condor is also associated with the heart, whereas the world of the eagle is associated with the mind. And these ancient teachings that come from Taita Alberto's ancestors, thousands of years old, the prophecies are that a time will come when the mind and the heart, the world of the eagle and the world of the condor, will be united, and the eagle and the condor will fly in the same sky, meaning that we as human beings will have both of those faculties working in harmony with each other.
Oh.
And that is part of the process that all human beings at this time are undergoing, experiencing in various ways in their personal lives, being challenged by problems that require that they use their intellect, that they use their reason, but that they also use their capacity to feel, to intuit, to sense, and to have compassion, so that we feel our union with each other as we are addressing the challenges.
That almost seems impossible, Martha, with what the world is going through right now, to come together and be as one. We're so divided and so much hate out there. When are we going to make that change?
You know, one of the things that Alberto would say is that we hear in the news and we hear in certain places one story about the nature of what's happening, but that if we go into our own individual lives and into our individual communities, especially if we connect with nature, which is the deep teaching of his path, that we discover that the individual human beings primarily care about taking care of each other, and that desire to protect each other and to keep each other safe is central to the human experience. So even though we are certainly, as you say, in a time where we are experiencing a great deal of polarizing and a great deal of conflict, if we look deeper at what's happening, we can see that these individual people, many of them who are in conflict, are in the conflict because of the story that they're telling about the nature of reality, and also because they are trying to protect something and take care of something.
Hmm.
So we all need to be able to access that place in ourselves, the heart, the intuition, that can sense our connection with other people and find out where is the common ground. What is it that we are trying to preserve, that we are trying to care for in these times? And it's really important to remember that, to look at the large span of human history and to remember that we are moving through various phases, and that if we stand back and look at the larger picture, we can see an overall transformative process that is underway, and we're in the middle of that. We're not at the end of the story. And so that is part of the importance of working with ourselves individually to heal what needs to be healed inside of ourselves, the divisions that we have in our own personality, so that we can contribute in a positive way.
But from the beginning of time, Martha, we've always been at war. People, you know, there's always someone who wants the power. I always say money and power, power and money is all interchangeable. But it's the power thing. I don't care if you call it religion. I don't call it there if you call it politics. Whatever the name is, it's always ones wanting to take over and you know, dominance over everyone else. So it's been that way since the beginning of time. How are you going to see change?
I understand why you say that, but I don't think that it has been that way since the beginning of time. That's not the way I perceive it or understand it. If we look at, for example, agricultural peoples and tribal peoples, the way that they survived within their community was to share the goods, was to share the work. And this is something in the Andes in my travels, and I spent many long periods of time living with the indigenous Quechua people in the Andes, being with them as they were going about their daily activities. And they were all communal activities, working in the fields, preparing the food, the music, the singing, the dancing, the beauty that they were sharing with each other. To me, that is what has made it possible for the human species to survive and to endure these difficult periods where there is oppression and where there are individual people who are attempting to, who are defining power as power over. But of course, we know from our own experiences that true power comes from within, and that true power is about working together in community. And so that, to me, is how the human species has survived.
But,
not through war, but through sharing.
Agricultural, yes, there were communities that way, and we did go through those periods. But now we're into computers and artificial intelligence. And we're not going to go back to agriculture. I'm not going to pick, you know, grapes for the rest of my life and trade with somebody else. We're past that. We're into a different phase now. So what do we do during this phase? We're not going to be going back to trading anything anymore.
I teach at the University of Michigan. I teach contemplative studies. And my students, many of them, come from the School of Natural Resources. There's a community garden on campus, a community farm, where they're learning to grow food. And they share it in the dormitories. The organic agriculture movement that really became activated in the late 1970s and 1980s and has grown to the extent that we have so much more access to organic food than we did in the 1950s or 1960s when I was a child, that fascination and that love with growing one's own food is very popular amongst the young people that I work with. And in the Andes, and that my book describes my experiences there, in the Andes, the people are living in very, very ancient ways. They're still, in some communities, I was in the rural areas, and that's where these techniques are still happening. They're making their own clothing, beginning with the hair of the llama. They raise the animal. They cut the hair, they clean the hair, they spin the hair into thread, they weave it onto looms. The dyes are made from plants and insects, natural substances that come from the earth. And the practices that I describe in the book are practices of working wherever you are, whether you're in the city or in the country, with nature, the elements of the earth, the water, the fire, and the air, which we have with us every moment, whether we're indoors or outdoors, and beginning to re-access our communion with the natural world, of which we are a part. Human beings are nature. We're not separate from nature. So to use technology wisely, we need to understand whether or not it is going to do harm. And the heart is the place that is resonant with whether or not any choice that we make in our lives is going to promote wellness and health and well-being for ourselves and others or not. So my book describes...
Well, hold on. Before you do that, I understand. This all sounds beautiful. It really does. But, you know, I'm in California, so we're the number 5 nation state in the world with agriculture and all that kind of thing. But, you know, doing these things of weaving and all that, it's wonderful for indigenous groups and, you know, isolated from a lot of the computers and the technology that we have. Nobody's going to go back to that. Not in mass. Maybe small groups might do it. Maybe your students at the University of Michigan, but I don't see that happening on a major scale.
It doesn't need to happen on a major scale. What we need each individual human being to connect with the source of their life, their physical life, which is the air that we breathe, the food that we eat, the sunlight, and the water that we drink. And those four elements, the earth, the water, the fire, and the air, are the elements that the elders in the Andes teach people who come from Europe and come from the United States and from Canada, from industrialized cultures. They teach individual people how to reconnect with those elements in order to vivify their own energy, to activate within themselves that sense of harmony that creates lightness of mind and happiness, so that that will then be shared in whatever way they are living their lives. It's not saying that we need to no longer use the intellect or reason or computers. Tita Alberto would speak of the computer as also nature. Everything is that is part of the material world is nature. And so the teaching is that we develop in ourselves the ability to, again, feel how to walk our lives in a way that brings genuine happiness, not the feeling of excitation that might come from, quote, getting what we want in the individual moment, but that feeling of expansion of self that comes through contemplative practices, that comes from being connected with nature. My students, we will spend half an hour outside sometimes in our classes, and it's so wonderful the way that they shift just in that half hour of being outdoors without being assigned any kind of work, just to be there in a peaceful way, and we're in a sort of park-like setting, so it's quite beautiful. And I'm sure that many people who are listening have had the experience of being quiet in nature for even a short period of time, and their mood shifts. So the teaching is not that we need to somehow transform the agriculture, everyone needs to become a farmer or something like that. It's that what can I do in my personal life, living the way that I live now, what can I do to help reconnect me with the natural world so that I can participate in the healing that needs to happen on the planet in order for the human species to survive.
But you know what? The nature has been damaged. The water is polluted, the air is bad, the land has been leached. How do we go back to the nature when it's not a really good place to be?
Nature, the water knows how to heal itself. The land knows how to heal itself. It's always quite surprising how quickly areas that have been damaged come back when they are given an opportunity to come back. And even in the cities where people are having gardens and growing their own food right in their front yard, it's all so alive. Nature is extremely powerful, way more powerful than human beings. So it's not so severely damaged. And again, we're in the middle of a phase.
I mean, look at the, and honestly, Martha, you know, people won't say we don't have climate change. We have climate change. Look at the number of tornadoes that are happening and hurricanes and, you know, bad things. It's because we've gone away. We've damaged Mother Nature.
Exactly. It's because of emphasizing too much the mind at the expense of the intuition and the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so the planet is responding to what human beings have
done. I think that the planet would be happy if we left. Just let her go back to what it was before. You know, and you also mentioned, this got my attention, dimensions of reality. What do you mean by dimensions of reality?
Depending on, well, for one example, the difference between what you and I are describing.
Okay.
If a person is living in a city environment, I live in a rural environment.
I live in a city. I live in the city.
Okay. So when I look out my window, I see beauty everywhere around me. I hear the birds and the fresh air and the sunlight. Today it's been raining, and that's beautiful too, but today we have sunlight. So I'm greeted by that every day. That's one reality. That's one way of perceiving. Another way of perceiving might be a person who's living in an apartment 20 stories up in the middle of a city where it's mostly cement. That's not to say that that would necessarily be bad. It depends on how the person experiences that for themselves. But those are examples of two different stories, two different realities.
So how do they come together? You say we're supposed to come together. How do you come together when you come from two different realities?
By sharing, like you and I are right now, by describing each other's world and finding common ground. Oftentimes, children are common ground.
Yeah, but they're not in charge. They're not in charge. You know, mom and dad still, you know, conduct what there's going to happen in their lives. What you sound telling me, it sounds beautiful. Don't get me wrong. It's just, I just don't see us going back to that.
It's not about going back. It's about going forward. Alberto would always say, adelante, forward. We cannot go back. What we need to do is access an innate part of our being, which is the heart, which is the intuition, which is the healthy bond with the natural world. And as we access that, then our cities will become healthier places. There will be more balance in the decisions that we make in the world. The transformation that human beings will be creating in the world is only going to happen if individual human beings change within themselves. Mm. So we can't force other people to change. We can't somehow tell everyone else how they should live their lives. Each of us needs to access within ourselves, what is my true path? And the teachings in this book are about how to do that through connecting with the elements of nature. And you can do it in the city. You don't have to be in a rural area to do it.
Got it. Now, before you went into this and studied for 22 years and in South America and all that, how did it change you? What were you before you started all this journey?
Well, I was a mother living in a rural setting, homeschooling my children, and growing food. Not that I was extremely successful. If we had to live on the food that I grew, we wouldn't have survived for long. But I was enjoying the experience of being with plants and with my children. And I became interested in shamanism. I had various mystical experiences, like I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, experiences where I really felt one with the natural world about me. And through a series of unexpected circumstances, I was invited to a gathering of shamans that John Perkins, who is the founder of Dream Change, brought to Michigan. And that is where I met Taita Alberto, who then invited me and a group of other people to come to Ecuador to live with his family and begin to learn their ancient teachings.
Okay.
And so I would say that it didn't change me in a certain way because I was already on that path.
Uh-huh.
But what it did do is it affirmed what I was experiencing in a solitary way. It brought me into a community where people were living in that joyful way that came about as a result of the practices that they do just naturally.
How many children do you have?
I'm sorry, what?
How many children do you have?
I have two children.
What are they doing?
Two boys.
What are they doing?
What are they doing? One of them is a massage therapist, and the other one is in heating and air conditioning.
Okay. Are they doing any trading or agriculture?
One of my sons does, yes.
Okay. Because I was going to say...
Just gardening, growing basil and tomatoes. He loves to cook, and so he uses them in his cooking.
Okay, I understand that. Yeah, I'm just looking at, you know, your own children are still not quite doing what you're doing.
No.
But you're saying that it's okay because they're still, you know, managing to be with other people. I'm trying to get the concept of everybody coming together and agreeing on something, but I don't think that's ever going to happen.
So my feeling about our children is that, and I feel this with everyone, mm-hmm. everyone has their own path.
Okay.
It's not, in my view, the way forward is not to do something cookie cutter and expect one's children to live the way one does.
Okay.
But it is to simply live one's own path to the best of one's ability. To continually be growing and learning, we meet challenges, all of us in our lives, that no matter what our spiritual training is, we have to learn more in order to work with that challenge that has come to us. And so to me, each person has a spiritual path, and on their path, they're going to meet certain challenges, and those challenges then will call them to access their own resources of understanding, to use their intellect, to use their reason, and also to use the heart, the intuition and compassion.
No.
And it doesn't matter to me what field of work a person is in. It is how they experience themselves and give to the world, no matter what type of work they are doing.
Gotcha.
So it can be something as simple as walking down the sidewalk and seeing a person and smiling at them, a stranger. And
now, before we've kind of run out of time,
I'm
so sorry, but we've run out of time. But do you have a website?
I do. It's natureandhealing.org.
Natureandhealing.org. And your book?
My book?
Encounters with the Mystical Traditions of the Andes, available?
The title is Shamanic Teachings of the Condor.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah. And then Encounters with the Mystical Traditions of the Andes is the subtitle.
Oh, good. Okay. So where do they get that?
It's available in bookstores, Amazon. Inner Traditions is the publisher, and they've made it available in all the typical ways that books are available.
Terrific. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, Martha. Keep up the good work, because we need all the help we can get.
Thank you, Mary. I appreciate you giving me the time.
Absolutely. Take care now.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Once again, that's Martha Winona Travers, and it's Shamanic Teachings of the Condor. Coming up, the power in your DNA. We'll find out how much power you've got.
I can't believe we have to make this commercial.
It's ridiculous.
You'll think it's ridiculous too. Listen to this.
This commercial is about, well, it's about parents being rude at high school athletic events.
Ridiculous, right?
It gets worse. Studies show more than 75% of new high school officials are quitting because of bad adult behavior.
So now there's a shortage of refs here in California. In almost all sports.
No officials means no more games.
Is that what you want for us?
Come on, parents.
It's time to grow up.
Cheer for your team.
Be proud of your children.
But stop being so ridiculous.
And don't make us run another commercial.
Because we will.
This message presented by the California Interscholastic Federation and the California State Athletic Directors Association, reminding you to always practice good sportsmanship.
Don't rock the boat, baby. Rock the boat. I don't tip the boat over. Rock the boat. I don't rock the boat, baby. Rock the boat.
Well, we're going to try and find out exactly what that means on rocking the boat. And maybe, just maybe, you'll have a little bit more of this kind of sound, because it's just interesting about life itself. Well, maybe it's in your DNA. Do you have a superhero inside of you? Would you like to maybe awaken that superhero and find your purpose and ignite your own power? Well, we're going to get started with Judy Wilkins-Smith, who is a world-renowned systemic work and constellations expert, author, Fortune 500 executive coach, and founder of System Dynamics, that actually provides strategies to unlock the superhero within each one of us. And her book, The Hidden Power in Your DNA, How to Use Genealogy to Explore Ancestral Patterns and Transform Your Life. Boy, I want to hear about this one. I'm ready for anything new. Nice to have you with us, Judy.
Lovely to be with you.
Fantastic. Okay. You say the two most important days in our lives, the day you're born and the day we find out why. That sometimes can take a long time.
It can take a long time if we are not awake. It really can.
Okay, we're not awake. How am I supposed to get awake?
You know, it's really about understanding that there is a very much bigger version of you. And, you know, we all do know that. If you watch people who go to all of these different comic cons, or they're really into Star Wars, they know that there's a hero inside, and they know that there's a superpower or a superhero inside. They've just got to find it. And I think it's not falling asleep on the job.
Okay, well, yeah, but what worries me is that they're taking on another person's power. When they go to these Comic Cons and everything, like, you know, Captain America and all these others, instead of finding their own power.
Yeah, they're wishing it was them. In other words, they're in search of something. They know that there's something. And so when they do that, it's how do I get into my skin that is like this? So, yeah, they dress up as a different people. But really, I'll tell you what sparked that train of thought for me a whole lot.
Okay.
So it was at Disney, and this was last year. Yeah, it was at Disney last year, and we were watching Fantasmic. And for those people who haven't been there, what happens is Mickey fights the bad guy, and Mickey wins. And I will tell you that right at the end of it, it's so interesting to watch. Everybody in the arena stood up and cheered. And one of the people, as we were going out, I heard someone say, I wish it was really that way. And I thought, oh, my goodness, it really is that way. You are those superheroes. We've just forgotten a little.
Well, what do you mean by a superhero? I mean, I can't put a cape on. So tell me what I can do.
No, but tell me what. Let me tell you what you can do. You know that you're a kind person. Amplify the kindness. If you're a happy person, what do people say about you? What do they really think about you? When they talk about you positively, what do they say? What do they remember you for or think about when they think about you? That's the superhero piece. And if we keep leaning into that, you suddenly find that what seems like just being nice opens a whole lot of doors.
Doors to where?
Doors to wherever it is you want to go. So here's the deal. You want to have a purpose or a goal. Sometimes finding the purpose is really hard. A goal, not so difficult. So if you have a goal and you really keep leaning in towards that goal and you use your niceness, your happiness, whatever it is, people are going to open doors for you.
Hmm.
They're going to say yes when you ask them, how do I learn about this? They will open doors for you. This is what Napoleon Hill is built on a bit, I think. And these are what, who's the other one? Bob Burt, the go-giver. It's the same idea of give first, then receive. But use all of who you are and don't underestimate what you've got.
Okay, what was your goal?
Oh, I have many goals. I still have many, many goals because as soon as I finish one, I'm ready for the next one. What was my first goal was to teach at Disney World. Actually, no, before that I had another one. I really, really wanted timeshare at Disney because I've loved Disney since I was teeny tiny, and when I found out Disney had died, I asked who was going to make the magic, and everybody laughed, and I said, well, if you won't, I will. And magic has been with me and Disney all around me since then. And I really wanted timeshare so that I could take my family to Disney and be one of those people who walked out of those gorgeous-looking accommodations. So I started looking at ways I could save for timeshare. And I will tell you, there weren't very many because we were new to the country and there weren't a lot of opportunities. But I learned that by being kind, which is one of mine, and I learned that by being awake, and my other big one, which is, boy, did I learn persistence. I learned that I could put a couple of pennies in a jar, and those pennies became a couple of dollars that then became a couple of $100, and I own Disney Timeshare. You know, there's a very old musical, I think it's called South Pacific.
And oh, yeah.
One of the tracks from that says, you've got to have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how are you going to make a dream come true? And that's where the superhero is.
Hmm.
The person who's making the dream come true. And it takes time and it takes effort. And it's far nicer than sitting getting nothing done in life.
Now, you also say that how you try to construct and use what you call a constellation to deliver powerfully insight aha moments. What if you never get that aha moment?
Well, I'm going to wait for somebody to not get it. But for my money, if you don't get it, keep going. At some point, relentlessly, it's going to be there, but you've got to be awake to it. You know, Let me give you a for example. I had somebody who came in and said to me, I'm the CEO of the company, no thanks to my jerk of a father. And when somebody says that to me, I'm always curious. So I said, all right, let's have a look. Tell me about this jerk of a father.
Uh-huh.
And she said he left us on the side of the road when I was a baby of 6 months old. He left my mother and my brother and I. And there were, I had two diapers, and that was it. Some kind stranger saw us and took us home. And turns out Mom wound up marrying the kind stranger, who became a very successful businessman, who then started a big business that this stepdaughter of his then became a CEO of. So she says, you see, no thanks to the jerk of a father. And I said, every thanks to your jerk of a father. And she said, how? And I said, would you like to be back where you were in a trailer park with your mom struggling and dad not having work? And she said, well, no. I said, so thanks, Dad. Thanks for putting us on the side of a road and letting us make our way, because if you hadn't, we wouldn't have had a way. And so it's also learning to see that what we sometimes think are terrible things in our lives are actually blessings.
Oh, okay. So how does genealogy fit into this?
Oh, yes. So genealogy. We have genealogy 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0.
Oh, I'm going for the 3.0. Go ahead.
Oh, absolutely, you're going to. But so let's go through them. Genealogy 1.0. We all know genealogy 1.0. It's where you belong. It's the family trees that you do, and people are so intrigued by them that there are over 100 million of them at the moment. We want to know where we belong. It's important. We want to know how we're connected.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I have to. I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care about my past. I'm a new life. I'm living my life the best that I can. I want to move forward. I don't want to look backward.
Well, sometimes it's quite wise to look backward just for a little bit before you move forward. It doesn't mean that, as we would say in South Africa, that you're farming backwards, you're moving backwards.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, so with genealogy 2.0, it's looking at what happened in my family system way back. So, see, we're taking you even further back. What happened in my family system all the way back there?
How far
and
back?
Then,
how far back?
As far back as you can go. I mean, these days you spit in a bottle, you send it off, and they say to you, okay, in your DNA it shows that you were in these states or you were in these countries. Your original DNA that
I did that. I got to tell you, I did that. My husband and I both did that. But, you know, they've got it broken down into so many countries. I can't follow everybody.
Absolutely. But here's what you can do. So then we go and have a look. So what are the big events that happened in those countries?
Oh, my poor country just got beaten up all the time.
Well, there you go. That's a very important one. Because the next thing to ask yourself is, okay, I'm in a poor country that got beaten up all the time. I'm guessing that's something like Poland or one of those.
Romania.
There you go. And then you want to ask yourself, what are the issues or the superstar moments or super spaces that I have in my life? What are those? Because if I then have a look and match them to the country I came from, I have to ask myself, so what superpower did I get because of this? Or what issue is trying to be resolved through me because of this?
Huh. Okay. Well, Romania was conquered by, you know, the Turks, though. I mean, just over and over and over again, because it was a small country. So,
right.
You know, it has a rich background because of that, because of so many different countries taking over. But I still don't know how that ties into who I am.
Well, who you are is a composite of all of that genealogy that echoes all the way down to you. Now, that we've got physical DNA, that's indisputable. Here we go. You've got brown hair, you've got blue eyes, you've got whatever you've got.
Yeah.
But what people don't understand is you also inherit emotional DNA. And your emotional DNA is your pattern of thoughts, feelings, actions, inactions. Now, it can go two ways. either you repeat the pattern of those who came before you quite unknowingly, or you look at the pattern of those who came before you and you go, you know what, I need to do this differently. And you see this a lot. People watch a mother struggling because she's doing three jobs. They watch a father who's dissatisfied at work. And without even knowing it, what we're doing, we start to take on those attributes. And then we wonder why they're there.
Okay, so how do I change that?
So there are a couple of things. First of all, you look at what it is, and then you create a goal for yourself bigger than where you are already. In other words, I really want to, go get the Disney timeshare. I mean, everybody laughed at me when I said that. They said, you're not going to do it, and I went, watch me. So that's your first one. So it's creating a goal that's bigger than your current circumstances. Why? Because otherwise you're not going to be inspired to get up off the couch at all. You're going to stay exactly where you were. So you've got to have something that motivates you to do different, do better, or amplify what's already there.
But you have to know what you're going for to begin with, don't you?
That's a really good idea, which is why when people say you should want less, I get a little concerned or a little baffled. No, you shouldn't want less. You should want more. It's how the world evolves. And interestingly enough, once we have more, what's the first thing that we do? We want to share it with the ones that we love. So having more is not about to make you a greedy piglet or any of the above terrible things. But what it does do is it keeps evolving humanity.
Okay. So where does one start? I mean, I'm sitting here, and I've been doing what I love my whole life, so I'm not only using my...
That's a good thing.
Well, yeah, haven't accomplished everything that I want to accomplish, even though I'm old, but I figured, hey, no matter how long I'm on this planet, or on this plane, I'm not giving up. I mean, I'm going to keep going and move forward. But, you know, again, you have to set a goal. Let me ask you, what was your ultimate goal besides the thing at Disney? Did you have an ultimate goal?
My ultimate goal is absolutely 1,000 people at a time, which we're working on, 1,000 people at a time at the event, all waking up and going out there and making a huge difference in their lives and their communities. That's my ultimate goal.
Do you really think you can change 1,000 people?
I think 1,000 people can change themselves.
If they want to.
If they're at an event, I'm assuming that they're there not just because they thought they had nothing better to do on a Sunday afternoon.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but they could be curious. They're there for curiosity, too.
They might be, but I want to tell you the events are not structured to invite curiosity. They're there to invite investment in yourself. So I would doubt they would just come for curiosity. But, hey, if they come for curiosity, they may find more than they bargained for.
Oh, okay. You also talk about use a constellation. What do you mean by a constellation?
Okay, so a constellation, I mean, this morning was lovely. I had somebody say to me, are you an astrologer? And I said, no. In this sense, a constellation is a grouping of elements in relation to one another within a system. In other words, members of the family within a family system, members of an organization, that sort of thing. Now, what we do that blows people's minds is people come in and they list the issues they want to work with, and then what we do is we identify all the different parts of that issue. And at an event, we use live representatives for each part. What people haven't been taught, or what most of us haven't been taught, is that you can dimensionalize what's in your head in front of you and get a really, really different and in-depth understanding of what you're dealing with. And so that's what we do. Each one of those represent a part of the puzzle. And I then ask the client to set that puzzle up the way that it feels or looks for them. And immediately they do that, you can begin to see who looks in, who looks out, who's interested, who's disinterested, who is close to some one person and further away from another. And so using that, I begin to ask questions. And as we do that, the hidden patterns surface, the unconscious loyalties surface, the hidden language surfaces. So now people are seeing, hearing, seeing, feeling, touching what it is that's affecting them every day. And because of that multi-sensory engagement, they arrive at an aha moment for them. And that's when they begin to rewire their brain. And, of course, then their lives change.
You know, I love what you're saying. I mean, what you're saying sounds beautiful. But it's almost kind of like if I were sitting home listening to this, I'd go, oh, it's just one of those woo-woo things. You know,
of course.
You know, and it's just like, that's not me. I'm not a woo-woo person.
How do you get them
to believe?
I don't actually have to. Normally when they come in, it takes me about maybe an hour of working, and they get to see it very quickly. I'm super lucky because I do this work with Fortune 500 and Fortune 50 companies, and they use this approach because they look at it and go, I can see that. I can hear that. This is logical. Okay, it makes sense. In fact, some of my best people are CFOs, and a CFO is a very logical being. They really don't tolerate woo-woo.
But well, what the heck are they looking for? They're already making big bucks, and they got a great title and living the good life.
Oh.
What else do they look for?
Okay, so first of all, when I work with CFOs, often it begins by working with what's a problem for them in the organization.
Oh, okay.
So we look at what's a problem for you in the organization, and that very quickly, as they see it resolve in front of them, then they start to ask questions about, well, hold on, who am I as a human being? How do I evolve? And we're off to the game.
Hmm. Okay.
So yeah, it's very logical.
Okay.
And very not.
Okay, yeah, a little bit of both, huh?
Yep.
Okay, so most people want to be a superhero, but all they're trying to do is exist. You know, they're trying to survive, put food on the table for their family, have a roof over their head, once in a while take a vacation or so. How do you convince them that they can be better than that? Not better, different. Because, you know, I don't want to say it's better. If they're happy in what they're doing, why not? You know, I remember when I was at university, and it was like, excuse me, I'm being here because I really want the education. I love what I'm doing, yada, yada. A lot of people are there because, well, I'm told that I have to have an education. And they'd probably make a better mechanic than they would having a degree. So how do you get them to realize what they really want?
That takes a lot of good questioning. And a lot of asking, what does your heart really say?
Yeah.
If you could do anything, if you could be anything, I don't care how crazy it is, tell me about it. And in fact, the crazier the better, because when you start talking crazy talk, it's usually you talking the talk of your ancestors, very often, their thoughts, their wishes. I want to know what it is that you want. And once you get the lid off that, and people begin to understand that, hey, I actually can do this. I'm actually allowed to have what I want. The socks come off.
Hmm. Okay. Because I think a lot of people do, you know, young people, their parents want better for their children. I understand that. But, you know, I think sometimes parents live through their children, and that's not healthy.
No, it really is not healthy, but what it's also saying is, well, I haven't figured mine out. Let's see if you can figure yours out so we can both at least enjoy something.
Or they'll try and say, this is what you should be doing because they didn't do it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That bothers me. That bothers me a lot because they couldn't accomplish
exactly.
It. They're putting themselves through their kids, and that's not fair because the kids should be, you know, choosing what they feel is right for them.
Yep, and those are the kids who come and visit me and they go, really? And we work through it and I say to them, okay, whose dream is this, yours or your mother's or your father's? And then they get this look on their face and they go, yes, you're not living your life, you're busy living their life, stop.
Yeah, easy to say, but not that easy to do.
Actually, easy to do once you understand that that's what the family system really, really wants. It wants the evolution. It wants the highest and greatest good. And so every time one of us evolves or stretches or moves and grows a bit, you're never just doing it for just you. Hmm. It's always about you and the family system.
Why should the family have anything to do with what I want?
Because you were born from it. You're connected to it. It will always be a part of you whether you would like that or not. It's how you came to be.
Because I'll be honest with you. Not that she wasn't proud of me after I did what I did, but my mom would have been happy if I was a teacher with 2.5 kids and living next door and going shopping with her all the time.
Yes, she would have. And then the minute that you did what you did and the blinkers came off, it would have been, well, oh, my goodness, there's a whole lot more that's possible here. I never knew.
Well, she, you know, was proud because of what I was doing, radio and television, and she could brag to her friends. But that didn't make a difference in what she wished that I had done. You know what I mean?
I wonder if you could go back and say that to her, if she would say, I still wish you'd done what you did. The fact that she was proud tells me that she looked at this kid and went, darn, she's doing good stuff.
Well, she was doing good stuff because she could brag about it. That's not necessary.
But, and you know what? If that's what your mom could do, and she could have someone who really inspired her, you did a darn good job.
Yeah.
I told you it's never just about you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, okay, we've only got about a couple of minutes left here. How does one begin? You have to sit down and evaluate who you are and what you are and where you want to go?
That's a really good first step. Who am I? Where am I? What do I want to do? What does that look like? And then you've got to listen to all of the excuses that you trot out, because we all do that. And then you've got to ask yourself, okay, if I keep with those excuses, which, by the way, are usually really good and plausible excuses, where will I be in a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years' time? Will I have done what I wanted to? If not, why don't we sit down and go, so what is it that I want?
Huh.
What do I want? And then what are my thoughts about that? What are my feelings about that? What actions do I take or not take?
Got it.
When did I notice that I wanted that? What was happening in my life at the moment?
Gotcha.
What do I make it mean about me, and what do I make it mean about others?
Now, do you have a website?
I do. It's judywilkins-smith.com.
Okay, -smith.com. And the book, The Hidden Power in Your DNA, available where?
All over.
Amazon,
yeah, everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you name it, it's there along with my other books. The two of them are right out there ready to go.
Well, hopefully we've given some hope to a few people out there that says, I got to find my aha moment.
Oh, it's so important.
Terrific. Judy, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Keep up the good work, because we've got a lot of stuff to do in this life. And don't waste the time, right?
Exactly. It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure to have you on. Come back and visit again.
Love to. Take good care.
You too. Judy Wilkins-Smith, name of the book, The Hidden Power of Your DNA. And we do have that power. We're going to take a news break here, and then after, we've got more topics to talk about, like living long and prospering, and what about artificial intelligence? Is it going to take over our lives? I hope not. It's a tool. We don't want it to take over. But after the news, I mean, I want to leave you with this thought, though, before we leave. We all have two lives to live. The second one starts when we realize that we only have one. And that came from, believe it or not, Confucius. And you know, it makes perfect sense when you think about it. Live the life the best you can. That's what Judy says. And find that aha moment that'll be special to you. It's Pop Talk, and we want to make sure that you can be a believer in yourself, too. More coming.